Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to Nightlight, a horror movie podcast. I'm your host, Prince, also known as Head Knights, and this is our interview series, and I am with Heather Wixon of Daily Dead. I feel like you have to say it like very mean.
You
like
can't that. Just be like, oh, it's Daily Dead.
You're right. It's just like Daily Happy Dead.
I'm gonna petition my boss. Good. I'm gonna tell him we're gonna change our name to Daily Happy Dead now.
As you should. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This is honestly like kind of a bit of a dream come true for me. I know we're friends and all that shit now,
what?
But like literally years ago, I would follow your work for like a solid 10 years.
That's crazy. I don't even follow my work. What are you talking about?
Well, you do great shit. You do a lot of cool stuff, and I appreciate your work, and you've been a huge inspiration to me wanting to honestly make a mold in the industry for horror. So thank you. And welcome onto the show.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm
gushing all over you. I'm sorry.
Oh, my goodness. People saying nice things to me. I never know what to say. I don't know what that says about me, but I mean, I think there's some therapy there or something. But no, thank you. That means a lot. You know, honestly, it's so funny because like I've been doing this now for almost 15 years. And, you know, it's like I look at like what I wanted. What I just initially set out to do when I first started, as opposed to what I've been able to do and what I'm still doing and what I'm getting to do. And like, I'm really happy. Like, I feel like, okay, cool. Like if it all went away tomorrow, I don't feel like I would have
wasted your time.
No, like I would have felt like it was all worth it. But I think for me, what's like kind of cool, is that now because I'm sort of been here, I've been hanging around the halls quite a while now, and I'm getting to see like a lot of new talent come in. And at first it's a little scary when you're older. It kind of reminds me of like, all the people who are working, on Jurassic Park, as special effects guys. And then they saw the cool, you know, computer dinosaurs and they're like, oh, well, there we go. So there's like a little part of me that's like, oh, and I'm seeing all these, like this amazing work from all these new, emerging voices in our community. And I'm just like, oh boy, I am in trouble. But actually for me, it then becomes really exciting because I know like I care about this stuff and I care about having good things out there for horror fans. So I'm like, if I walked away tomorrow, you know what? Everything is in really good hands. We've got great podcasts like yourself. We've got fantastic writers. Like it's really kind of exciting because it wasn't like this when I first got into it. It was pretty insular. Mm-hmm. It was a much different sort of vibes, if you will. I'm like in my 40s, but I'm all about the vibing.
So, all about the vibes.
All about the good vibes. But yeah, it was such a different experience that I'm really glad that everybody coming into it now has more opportunities because there really weren't a whole lot back then. Back in my day, kids.
Yeah, it's actually interesting you even say that because I feel like when I got into the industry, it definitely I don't want to say it was off from a fluke because like I definitely did work hard to get here. But when I got into the industry, like I didn't expect for all of this to even happen. I was just like, oh shit, like, whoa, Bloody Disgusting hit me up and they want me to be on their podcast network. And then people like yourself started following me and stuff like that. And I was like, what is going on? Like, what is happening? Why are people noticing me? Because last year, like, and I some of my listeners may know this, but last year, like, you know, we were in a rough spot with this show. Like we almost like were kind of, we were happy with the show, but we weren't going to like end it or anything. But we were in a spot where we're just like, what do we do when we're only maintaining 30, 40 listeners an episode. Yeah. Like, what do we do? And we didn't really have an answer. We didn't know how to really market ourselves at the time. And this is just last year, you know, and we didn't know how to really be outspoken and things like that. And all of us, like, were around maybe 200 followers on Twitter at that time and stuff like that. And most of those people were, like, people we actually knew personally and worked with and things like that. So we didn't know how to really truly get our name out there. And then the whole fucking shit show of what happened in June with police brutality and all of these wrongful deaths and things like that in the Black community is kind of what sparked this this push in myself to really get out there and really, like, try to make my voice actually, I guess, make its way around.
Yeah.
And then Blade of Disgusting released that tweet. And now here I am talking to Heather Wixon.
A year later, Silver Bolo, all kinds of stuff, you know?
Silver Bolo. Yeah, it's nuts. It's absolutely insane. But this isn't about me. This is definitely about you.
We can make Heather. It about you. That's cool, too.
I'll be in there. I'll sprinkle myself in there every now and then.
I'm a generous guest.
I appreciate that. Thank you. But I am curious, what pretty much sparked your interest in horror?
You know, when I grew up, again, I'm sounding like I'm telling these old lady tales. But I grew up in the 80s, and my mom was a single mom. So back then, like, getting babysitters were expensive. So yeah. She just took me to movies. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. So, like, I was in a theater at age 3 watching American Werewolf in London.
Whoa.
Which is weird because that's actually kind of one of my first movie memories. So,
really?
Yeah, because it was, I remember, and it's funny, I still remember this because it was my mom and her best friend, who's my auntie, and then me. And we were sitting there, and I remember looking and seeing the movie theater scene on a big screen, but I was confused because we were sitting in a movie theater. So, but there's something I just remember about that so well. And I also remember my aunt who, like, I love her to death, but she's so not a horror person. And I remember sure. She looked at my mom and she's like, oh, I think Heather is getting scared. I'm going to take her to the lobby. And I remember playing Pac-Man afterwards, like her taking me out and us playing Pac-Man while my mom finished the movie. But, like, it was such a different time where, you know, people weren't really regulating a lot of what their kids were watching, especially, like,
right.
In that golden age of VHS. So, like, I saw The Thing at age 5, which is
– fuck.
Yeah, right? I was terrified of dogs, especially because, like, I had a neighbor who had a really mean dog who actually, bit me twice. Yeah. And he was, like, that kind of dog. And he got, like, one day he got loose and, like, literally, like, ran right into our yard as I was playing.
Oh,
and
fuck,
like,
that's terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, between, you know, The Thing and Cujo, I was like, no dogs. Now I have 2 dogs. Go figure. But, like, I remember, like, seeing that at, like, age 5. And, like, my best friend's parents were really into, like, sci-fi. So that's where I saw, like, a lot of sci-fi stuff, like Terminator when I was really young. And Alien when I was way too young. And I remember that movie messed me up. Big time when I was little. And then it was like also in that day and age, it was still sort of the end of the golden days of drive-ins. And again, with my mom having sort of a limited budget, like we would, especially in the summer, we would spend a lot of time at the drive-in because you could get, you know, go see 2 movies for $5.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And so, you know, we would go, my best friend and her parents would come and, like, you know, just be like this fun little thing we would do a lot of, like, I think I spent almost every 4th of July at the drive-in for That's like so a good 6 cool. years.
That's so cool.
Yeah. It was different. Like you could grill there. Everybody's like kids are running around. I remember
That's awesome.
One of my favorite double features was Aliens and the Fly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, so it was just kind of like sort of this natural osmosis because it was just stuff my mom was watching. And I would just be there, you know, and then I would start to have a voice at the video store and be like, oh, what do you want to rent? And then I sort of became obsessed with this movie called Terror in the Aisles, which Scream Factory just put out by itself.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, but for so long, it either, you know, you had to have the VHS of it, because I never had a proper DVD release, or you had to have the original Universal version of Halloween 2, because that was a special feature.
Right.
So not that I own three copies of it just in case, but I do. but it became like, that was like my, sort of my go-to movie when I was a kid, because like I would see all these different movies and then I would look at the cover and it had like all the names in the skull and I would like pick out the titles and like we would just be renting movies all the time. Like, I'll tell you, renting Suspiria at age 8 is pretty traumatic. And I like my best friend like would still to this day remind me of that.
How did that opening scene not like scar you for life as an 8-year-old?
You know, honestly, the worst scene for me was the razor wire scene. I don't know why. Seeing her helpless in that room. Because almost, it's because like that opening death of Suspiria is almost like too fantastical in a way. Like you almost can't believe what you're seeing.
That's fair.
But I mean, it's still effective and it's still perfect and I love it, but it still feels like, whoa, that's like, that's bananas. But like the girl just accidentally falling into the room of razor wire. First of all, I don't know why you need a room of razor wire. It seems like pretty poor design, but for some reason it always haunted me. Like that was it. I mean, and then her with the needles
in her
eyes.
It was so effective that it's been used in so many other films ever since Saw. Like, yeah. It's just like, it's such an effective way to jar your audience, because that is like the concept in your head. We're just like, why is there a room full of razors?
Like, yeah. Like, that's just, you know, that's not exactly a place you want to hang out, so.
Right. It kind of reminds me of, like, the Winchester House.
Yeah.
In San Jose. Like, it's just like, it's like, why do you have a room that goes to literally nowhere? Like, yeah. That's interesting. I used to work very close to there. I used to work at an IKEA that was around there. And then actually work close to the mall that was even closer. But it'd always be weird shit happening in our IKEA that I used to work at. Terrible place to work, by the way.
But great meatballs, terrible benefits.
Yeah, those meatballs get old real fast. But
I would imagine so.
Yeah. The cinnamon rolls never got old, though. Those were great. But it would always be like weird shit that would go on, and we would always just blame it on the Winchester House. We were just like, because of the Winchester. It wasn't even that close. It was just like, you can maybe drive another 25 minutes or something that you're there. But yeah, blame the Winchester House for everything.
I don't blame you. Yeah, I do not blame you. But yeah, so like it was just sort of started there. And I think it really hooked me with the first like Nightmare on Elm Street, because it was like I saw Nightmare on Elm Street before I ever saw Halloween. So to me, like Freddy was sort of my original boogeyman, and there was just something like that terrified me about him, but I also like couldn't stop watching either. So, and I had friends who like wouldn't come and play at my house. I shouldn't say house, because we grew up in Trailer Park, but over like where I lived, because I had a Freddy poster in my room and it scared the crap out of everybody.
So, so how old were you when you had that Freddy poster?
I got that one at like, I want to say I was like 9.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. That's awesome. I had like a fucking poster of Shamu when I was 9.
Well, I had, and this one's aged poorly, but over my bed I had Hulk Hogan. Sure. So that's aged poorly, unfortunately. and then over my bed was Hulk Hogan, and the other wall was Freddy. And then around my closet as I got older, especially when Lost Boys hit, I had a whole wall of the Corys. Cause like there used to be like those like teen magazines, and I like pull out all the little like one sheet posters and just like basically plaster them around like one whole wall. So I had a wall of Corys too.
That's awesome. I'm glad your mom just let you express yourself too.
Like, yeah. You know, she was like, what are you going to do?
Sorry about that, folks. We got a little cut off from some technical difficulties on my end. My bad. But Heather, as you were.
Yes, the ghost of Winchester that came for him, everybody.
Oh, please. That's scary.
That's what you get. If your lights go out next, like you're in trouble. Just call it. Yeah, we don't need that. I just kind of always kind of grew up loving it. I was the kid who was like, every time you have a sleepover, like, you know, you'd always bring like a movie to your friend's house to watch. And I was always like bringing either like Fright Night or Sleepaway Camp, which got me in trouble a few times.
You were just like, oh, we're watching what I want to watch tonight.
You know, and it's funny, like, because, like, for me, like, Sleepaway Camp, like, I just was, like, so mesmerized by that movie as a kid because, I mean, there was just things that it obviously you just never really saw before in a lot of ways. And the ending is so mind-blowing that you just want to share that with your friends. But then, like, I remember I was at a friend's house and their dad walked in right as the ending happened. Yeah, and I got a very pulled aside and got a talking to.
Damn,
I did.
I mean, it's all and, out.
But here's the thing: I didn't even realize like what the problem was because I was a kid.
How could you?
So I was just like, well, you know, Angela's just different. That's all. Like, it didn't even dawn on me that there was quote unquote something wrong with it. It was just different, you know. And I don't know. So that was just like. I guess I was an inadvertent troublemaker.
Like, I'm just out here trying to share horror movies with people.
Right? To share the horror love. And, you know.
I mean, also, granted, the 80s was a beautiful time for horror, but at the same time, it was very taboo as well, right? Like, I mean, we had so much shit going on. Yeah,
you had, like, Reagan's Family Values.
Reagan's Family Values, Satanic Panic. Like, it was just, there's so much going on during that time frame. So you're just like... Yeah, pick and choose in battles, I guess, in a way. Like, who can I share this with? I love it and I want to share it, but who's not a fucking prude? Like,
yeah. Absolutely.
That's awesome, though. Like, that you know, you started at an extremely young age and at the same time. And it's funny because, like, I feel like that is like the go-to answer for most horror fans. It's like, watched it when I was 4 or 5 and things like that. I've only met one person so far that I know who watched it at like the appropriate age. And it was like, they were like 18, 19. That's and it was so hot to me too. I was like, wait, so like, did you just try to stay away from it? You're like, no, my parents just wouldn't let me. I was like, oh shit, okay.
And like you listened to them?
And you were a good kid.
What?
So I was, you know, it kind of catches me off guard when people say something like that. But that's so cool that your mom was just kind of just like, you know, what can you do? Heather's gonna be Heather, she's gonna like what she likes, and that's awesome. That she allowed that. So with your fascination with horror at such a young age, and fast forward to, I guess, now, what kind of got you interested in wanting to write for horror and write about the genre? What was that kind of came to your mind, especially at the point of when there weren't many writers in horror at the time when you pretty much started? Like, you damn near for sure kind of paved the way for a lot of people.
I wouldn't say that. The thing is, well, it was sort of this weird perfect storm in my life. Cause it's funny. Cause like now I'm like, you know, I live in LA and we live in an apartment and it's sort of like this month to month existence. But that really wasn't like my life, when I was in my 20s, and I got married very young. Like the year after my ex like graduated college, because I actually didn't get to finish school the proper way. I kind of was already working like a full-time job and I was already making like really good money. And I was like, well, you know, why am I going to put myself through this when I'm already doing what I'm doing? But I always knew something was like off, and I just kind of put it to the side because I was kind of just doing all the things that like people were sort of expecting me to do. Like, you know, you get married, you buy a house and you do all these things.
Basic life standards.
And I'm not saying those are, you know, and it just kind of keeps escalating as you get older and stuff like that. And you're like, okay, I go from a townhouse to a house. And then it was like, oh, we have a house, but now we're going to build a house. And it was like right before like the real estate thing collapsed. And it was just like a really interesting time because I felt really lost because I was doing all these things that everybody else wanted me to do, but I wasn't doing anything that I wanted to be doing. And so I started just kind of doing like part-time writing in general for like newspapers because I didn't really know what else to do with it. I'd always been a writer. Like even in elementary school, like myself and a couple of my classmates, we actually petitioned our elementary school to start a school paper.
Did it work?
Yeah. When I was in fourth grade, and it worked. And I think they still have it too, which is kind of cool. Yeah, but that was like our doing. And I remember my friend Anne was the one who like, she picked the title. And I just remember because like our school is Admiral Richard E. Byrd School, because it was like for the guy who went up to like Antarctica or whatever. And so our newspaper name was A Little Bird Told Me.
That's so cute.
So I know, right? She was really smart too. She also like, we had like something with NASA with like a naming contest back in the day, because this is like Challenger era. And, like, somehow she ended up getting to name, like, the mascot that they brought onto, like, one of the shuttles. It's crazy. Well, she's really good.
Kudos.
And now she's, like, works for the Supreme Court. Yeah.
Damn, that's,
anyway.
That's a cool story. That's so cool. Good for her.
I know. She was, like, so great at everything. Anyway, not that this is a show about her, but she's awesome. But, yeah, so, like, I'd always been a writer. And I just kind of, at a certain point in my life, I became a realist. And I was like, oh, I have bills to pay. I went away to school my first year of college. And after I came home, my mom was basically like, oh, oops, I can't pay for school anymore. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
What am I going
to
do?
So I basically had to stay home. Yeah. And then was kind of just working jobs, trying to do like, you know, community college and stuff like that. But it wasn't working. And so I just kind of focused on having a job. And then my boyfriend at the time, like we got married and stuff like that, because we went to high school and stuff together. And so we just built this life. But this life wasn't really my life. It was the life everybody else thought I should have. And it was just kind of like, I could feel it. Like I just knew something was off and I didn't know what. And it was sort of a weird coincidence. It was summer of 2007. And we'd always go to this convention in Chicago called Flashback Weekend. And I actually go back there now and co-host, which is kind of fun. It's kind of a fun thing because I used to go as a fan. Yeah, so it's kind of come full circle in that way. And I was sitting there, and it was the year that Adam Green was there promoting Hatchet.
Oh, shit. That's awesome.
And, yes. So it was like, I was sitting in the audience, and he's telling this really inspirational story about Dee Snider, and how Dee was like really instrumental in like, you know, helping him get his, you know, push him to like, you know, make his movie and get out there. And like Dee even showed up for like his first premiere and stuff like that. And it just made me realize like, you know, I have to go out and figure out what it is I want for myself. And I knew I liked writing. I knew I liked horror. I was like, well, how do I bring these together? And I kind of knew of like websites out there, but like to me, like, yeah, like it was still the age of like the Yahoo pages and like Entertainment Weekly. Like I wasn't as fully ingrained with like the horror sites specifically. And I just happened to be looking on Craigslist, and this was like maybe 2 weeks after Flashback. And I saw an ad for this startup horror website called TerrorTube, which is no longer in existence. But they were looking for somebody to do reviews. And I was like, oh, that sounds kind of fun. And I reached out, and I'd been kind of doing a little freelance here and there for like these like music websites and stuff like that. Just enough to like show people I knew what I was doing.
Yeah. To a degree. Kind of like to make a portfolio for yourself in a way.
Yeah, basically. Cause like, I mean, I don't even know if I know what I'm doing anymore, but you know, maybe a little bit back then. And I just kind of like reached out, and he was like, yeah, let's do it. And I remember my first review was for The Invasion, which was the Nicole Kidman, Daniel Craig version of Invasion of Body, of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, yeah, that was not a good movie.
Terrible review. It wasn't a good movie, but the review was probably worse. I'll be very honest.
Yeah.
But it was out there and I did it and I was happy with that. But I went back and read it a couple years ago, and I was like, oh boy, this is... I was like, don't read your early work. Never do that. So that was a lesson learned. But yeah, and so it just got my foot in the door. And then as I kind of was just sort of doing my thing for TerrorTube, like I get more and more opportunities. Adam Green actually introduced me to the publicists for Anchor Bay, which then sort of became my first foot in the door. And I was able to start covering more of their movies, you know, whether it was their new movies or their classic movies. And it just kind of grew from there. And then I'd gone to Sundance in 2009.
Wow.
Oh, my God. There's a spider crawling in my bedroom right now. Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry. I just caught it. And it's on the closet door. Holy crap. Okay. Anyway, I'm going to finish my story and text SOS. To my other half.
Well, no worries.
Sorry. This is real life, folks. It's like a big spider, too. Oh.
Do you have arachnophobia?
A little bit, yeah. I love that movie, but I hate that movie, if that makes sense.
That makes total sense.
Like, I love it, but yeah, I also hate it.
I've been hearing about people getting spiders to kind of cure their arachnophobia. So far, my cousin has a tarantula, and she loves it. She loves her tarantula, and it worked. Like, it cured her arachnophobia, and she's like, I love my tarantula now. Like, she doesn't want animals at all. She just wants her tarantula. I'm just like, how long do they live? And
that's bananas.
I forgot how long she said, but I guess she said something like 5 years or something like that. But which that sounded bananas to me in general. But she sent me a video once of like it shedding its skin. I was like, I don't want this.
Molts. Oh, and it molts.
There it is. I don't want this. Don't want this on my phone.
Yeah, well, they molted. Like, creepy.
That was disgusting. And it was stuck to it, so it was like dragging its own body around. And I was like, oh, it looks kind of cool, but yeah,
they're nuts. Gnarly. My mom's boyfriend when I was a kid actually had one. His name was Dirty Harry, and then they flushed him when he died.
Wait, was your mom's ex boyfriend like, Dirty Harry or?
No, he just really liked him.
Got it. Okay. I was like, all right. So, I need the history of that name.
Yeah, but when Dirty Harry died, they flushed him, and I was like, I refuse to use the bathroom for like 3 days. I went over to a friend's house because I was like, don't go to Australia. No. I've seen enough pictures to know I am not welcome in Australia.
I lived there. I lived there for like 3 months. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh, you're so brave.
That's all I hear.
Yeah. So back to non-spidery things. I just kind of realized like, oh, I needed a big change. And so I just kind of started reaching out to places. And then 2009, I ended up going to Sundance. And there's a lot of folks who kind of are like, oh, you know, Sundance is really expensive and like, you know, you can't go if you don't get credentials. I went without credentials my first year. Like, I didn't let that stop me. I just bought some tickets. And I was at the point where like my personal life was sort of falling apart at the same time as all this was happening. Like, I was starting to really get ingrained in my career, but like also everything at home was falling apart. And so I was in the middle of like going through a divorce. We had two houses, and this is kind of right in the middle of like the housing crisis that essentially went into foreclosure, which was kind of crazy. And then I was like, all right, I'm like, I need to go to Sundance. I want to cover these movies. And so I just started selling a bunch of stuff, like just to kind of pay for everything. And once I had enough money, I got my airfare. I got a hotel outside of Park City because it was cheaper. Rental car, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I went there for a couple of days and just covered a bunch of movies. And then out of the blue, I got was approached by Dread Central. And they were like, oh, hey, do you want to do some stuff for us? And I was like, oh, sure. And the irony of that is that, and I can say this now because that person's not there anymore, so it's fine. But the irony was that like 4 months prior, they had mentioned on, I think it was on Facebook, that they were looking for people to come write for them. And I emailed them about it. Never heard back.
That's funny.
So so for real, like Sundance ended up sort of getting me in the door, which I was really grateful for. And I did a bunch of stuff for them, and I was still doing stuff for TerrorTube. And then, like right around that time, I lost my day job in Chicago. And I think honestly, like the company itself, like they ended up like letting go, like.
Well, this is around 2009, you said?
The following year.
Oh, yeah. So it was
so everything was going sideways.
Well, I mean, yeah, bad recession for us, right?
Yeah. So it was kind of one of these. I think my boss knew I wanted to be out in LA writing,
doing
stuff.
Cool shit.
And
that makes
sense.
And
I think he was like, yeah. And so he basically, I think he just realized like I was never just going to go do it. And because like he knew I went to Sundance and like previous years I was going to Scream Fest out in LA in October and stuff like that. And I think he just realized like, well, she's going to stay here regardless. So I have to get her out the door. And it's funny because like when they fired me, like, they thought I was really going to be mad or whatever. And I didn't care. And I remember coming back like a few months later to have lunch with one of the ladies there. And they were like, what are you doing here? And I was like, calm down. I'm not here to like yell at anybody. I'm just here to have lunch. Like, I don't care.
Like, I live in LA now. I'm myself. Like, relax.
Yeah. You know, so I'm like, it's all good. You guys paid me, you know, a bunch of money at the end. That's fine. You know, and I just kind of came out here, and it's funny, you know, cause everybody sort of, there's like sort of this back and forth of like, whether, you know, if you're passionate enough about this, because you have a day job, and you know, the thing is you got to pay your bills.
At the end of the
like
day.
That's the unfortunate. Yeah. You know, and the only reason I was able to move out here in the first place is because I came out here on vacation anyway, and happened to land a job interview and got a job working at a school. So, yeah, so I came out here and I had a job interview on like, I flew out on Tuesday, I had a job interview on Wednesday, and I think by like Saturday or Sunday, like I had to fly back home to Chicago to pack up in a week and basically move out here.
Wow.
So, you know, and it wasn't easy. Like, there was a ton of struggles, and it's one of those, I sacrificed a lot of things that a lot of people be like, they think I was crazy, you know, for doing, you know, giving up sort of having that structure of like having the typical home life and all that kind of stuff. But I just walked away from it because it wasn't right for me at that time. And the way it wasn't right for myself or my partner. And I knew it. And I knew we both had better things waiting for us out there, you know? And so I just did it. And it's weird because like when I started, like there was maybe three other women doing this, you know? And so for me, like you say, like I paved the way, like for me, they That's paved awesome. My way. Because there's no way I would have been able to do this without like Yovanka, who used to work for Rue Morgue, and she used to run Rue Morgue, and now she's an amazing filmmaker. Stacey
awesome.
Wilson, you know, who also is a filmmaker. And, you know, has been doing this a lot longer than I have, you know, so without women like that, like being out here, because it really, especially when I started, you know, pardon my French, but it really was a sausage
fest. Oh, yeah. No, totally.
Like, everything was just endless dudes everywhere. Like every horror related thing, event, anything, it was 98% guys.
And I'm trying to just add a little bit more blackness to it all.
I get you know what's interesting that you mentioned that too is because you know I'm about I really like representing like different voices, and when I set out to do the book stuff, I didn't want to do like, you know, talk to 80 different white guys from the Midwest, you know, because that's the same thing. But you know what's crazy, I've been really trying to hunt it down. There haven't really been any black special effects artists.
Oh fuck yeah, you're right. I can't name any of them.
And like, I was even thinking of like crews that I would run across, like when I was working in the industry and things like that. And I was like, no, like not a single one. And that is a damn shame.
That is a shame. That's interesting. Yeah, I can't think of any.
So that's why I always sort of apologize to people. Like, I'm trying to be as diverse as possible. But for the time frame that I'm doing the books for, like, there were very few women. Most of the people working were white. So I'm trying to, like, pull from different countries and things like that. It's tough.
That's hard. You know?
And it's hard to crack that diversity. But I think what's amazing is when I look at where our community or our industry or whatever it is, where we were 10 years ago versus where we are now, like we're in such a better place.
Oh yeah.
Because it just isn't the same five guys yelling over each other about their opinions. You know?
It's interesting too. Cause like, I remember when I started kind of getting into horror, I guess beyond the main scenes of horror. Because I didn't grow up in the greatest of neighborhoods. You know, I grew up in the hood. It's just plain and simple as that. And pretty much when I lived in San Francisco, I moved to Fresno when I was like maybe in the sixth grade or so. So I was maybe like 12 or 13. And when I moved to Fresno, it was just moving from one hood to another. So I would just get a bunch of bootlegs from like my local bootleg guy at Walgreens. And he found out that I loved horror movies, and I was just like, yeah, I love horror movies, and I don't, you know, I don't know where to find them. And he's the guy who told me about Bloody Disgusting and stuff like that. And I would have to sneak on Bloody Disgusting because the name Bloody Disgusting, it would always block at my schools and stuff like that. So I was just like, I would have to sneak and figure out ways to get on the website. And then that's when I started finding out about like Remorque, and when I saw their magazines, and Fangoria, they were in their stint, I guess, at that point, where they weren't around during that time. But I knew about them because of like Bloody Disgusting and stuff like that. So I would have to sneak on those websites, and I would, then I got the bootleg copy of VHS, and I was like, oh fuck, like this is Bloody Disgusting made a movie. Holy shit. And like, I'm a super fan at this point of Bloody Disgusting. Like whatever they do, I'm eating it up. So like, I was like, oh shit. Okay. So watched the hell out of VHS, really, really loved it. And then when I got into, like, I guess honestly, when I got into college is when I started learning more about, like, I could totally buy this stuff. Like, I didn't have to do any of this what I was doing. But it was how I was able to consume them. And when I would get these bootlegs, this is how I found out about Trick or Treat. This is how I found out about Let the Right One In, Martyrs, all those types of films. And in the early 2000s to late 2000s. And I was just, cause like, I guess for me, how your era for horror is the 80s, mine's the 1000s. Like I like the 1000s is where my horror persona truly shines, I guess. But it's interesting because like, I find it funny when you actually figure out ways to consume movies. Like most people have the stories of like, oh, I used to go to the video stores, and I did that too, but I only went to the video stores to look at the covers. Like I never rented them from Blockbuster or anything like that, because my grandmother and my aunt totally would not let me. Like they're just like, no, you're not doing that. We're not doing that.
They're like Finding Nemo right, over here.
Exactly.
Thank you.
So I would be pretty bummed out because I was like, fuck, I really want to watch these movies. And like April Fool's Day, like I actually, which I barely watched for the first time like 3 years ago. And but that particular cover always interests me, like her braid being a noose and the knife behind her back walking towards the picnic. I'm like, that's fucking awesome. Like that looks so cool and I want to know more. And then the dentist and stuff like that. Like I was just like, all of these covers were like how I got my fascination into wanting to watch it. And it wasn't until like I started kind of getting my bootlegs and things like that is when I truly got into the genre and saw some gems, saw some really, really crude ones, obviously. But I think it was that I always blank out on the name because every person has, I feel like, these names. But it was like that Fear Festival thing that was like showing at movies, the 8 films to die for.
After Dark films.
So I would buy those because they never checked your date of birth because you just bought them online. So I would buy those and have tickets to those at the actual movie theaters. And at the time it was Edwards Theaters in Fresno. And when I would go, I would be the only person there. And my grandma would take me. She was just like, all right, like, you know, you're into it now. So she would take me to these movies and she would never go. She would just drop me off and just like either go home and come back and pick me up. And I'm like, I'm in like the 9th grade, maybe 8th grade at this time. And like, I would go every year. Every year I would go to these, and I thought I was the fucking coolest person because I was like talking about all these unknown horror films and shit. And genuinely, my friends did not give a fuck.
Well, there were some gem in those After Dark movies.
Oh yeah, I mean, God, we got Butterfly Effect 3 in there, and the deaths of Ian Stone, and like you got some Lake Mungo was a part of those. So like, yeah, there's some big old gems in there. Gotta love it.
Yeah, gosh, that feels like such a lifetime ago.
It does. It really does. It really, really does. But
I think I still have, like, from a couple of the festivals out here, like, because they would always do, like, a premiere in L.A. I think I have, like, they would always give away these clear backpacks.
You got, like, swag and stuff
from
that?
I just think
That's so cool.
Yeah, and I actually think I tried to sell one on eBay once, and nobody would take it. So if I find it, it's yours. God. I will send it to you.
Oh, thank you.
I know we have one in this house somewhere. Because actually, we just cleaned our at our car. Because I crashed our car last year, and so we eventually had to get a new one. And so we finally junked the one that I crashed last year. We were cleaning out the trunk like a couple months ago, and I think there's at least one, if not two, of those backpacks. So I should find them. I didn't know that they'd be such hot commodities. We literally tried to sell one on eBay once, and it never got like one view for like a month.
Come on, people. That's history right there. You're passing up history.
I know.
Oh, that's incredible. So,
but yeah, if I find it, it's all yours.
That's awesome. I really, really appreciate that. Keeping things around the realms of your interest in horror, like what would you say are your typical favorite horror genres? And I know that's like a loaded question, but you don't have to rank them or anything. But what would you say is your like your typical go-to horror genres?
You know, I tend to always gravitate towards horror comedies. I don't know why, but like there's just something about kind of watching a horror movie that you walk away with a smile on your face.
It's a different feeling afterward. For sure.
It is. And you know, don't get me wrong, I like I like the serious art house oppressive.
You're not gonna make it out alive.
As much as the rest of the person. Yeah, you know, I mean, I like The Lodge, but it wouldn't be my go-to movie to watch a lot. And there's other people who would, but I know what my gauge is. And so, I would say, horror comedies are probably up there. And then it's kind of a toss-up between, vampires and werewolves, which is such a basic thing to say.
I don't think so.
Which also probably, but I think it also explains, why I will always fervently defend the Underworld movies. Because I'm like, well, it has both. Fair. How do I hate these movies?
That's fair. That's very fair. I think I've only seen two of those. I don't think I've ever watched the last one. Which was Unleashed? Is that the last one? No. Is that?
Did I make that up? Oh. You did. Although I would go see Underworld Unleashed in a...
I was like, I totally made that up.
I think the last one Blood Wars? I think it was.
You might be right. I'm not too sure. I'm looking it up right now, though, because now I'm genuinely curious. Oh, Blood Wars?
Yes, it was.
Oh, do you have the trilogy? The Essential Collection is what it's called. The cover is fucking incredible, but it also comes with exclusive, never before seen Underworld Endless War anime shorts.
Oh, I have never seen
those. It is available on
those.
Amazon right now for $44.90.
Oh, see, I just have the regular.
It's an 8-disc set.
Oh man, I can't believe I don't own that. Well, it's so strange. Yeah, I have the regular movie set, but nothing that fancy.
Well, you know what? It's yours now. It's yours now.
I'm gonna have to watch some anime movies.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I actually once called them. I called the Underworld movies the Lord of the Rings of werewolf movies or something like that. Somebody made me a really funny meme for it. Yeah, so that was my one claim to fame, 2014. taking it back. But yeah, so I love creature features. I like sort of that otherworldly elements. Don't get me wrong. I love, I can appreciate, movies like Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer and things like that. But they're not my go-tos because I don't necessarily watch horror to feel bad. Like I watch it to get excited, try to discover something new, either whether it's about something that possibly couldn't exist in this world or it's about myself or just the human condition. But I don't really watch them to
You're not trying to
feel bad.
Complete and utter hopelessness after watching a film. That's fair.
Yeah. Because I think the last movie that I saw that was kind of like that was The Lodge. And I was just like, oh.
Yeah, you ain't happy after that one.
No, and actually it's funny because I don't nothing really scares me anymore when I watch movies, but it was that was the first movie in a really long time that I actually had nightmares about. Because I was at Sundance and I actually woke up and I thought somebody had duct taped my mouth closed. because I felt like I couldn't breathe out of my mouth, and I thought somebody like had actually duct taped my mouth, and I woke up like in a panic.
I feel like Viola and Franz, they love duct tape in their movies. They really love duct tape.
Yeah, they really do. And it's funny because I actually liked Goodnight Mommy, but maybe because it was like about, you know, terrible little kids that it's so far removed from reality. But these are terrible older kids. I think the lesson is like, kids are
dicks.
Kill you, I think. Yeah, you're in so much trouble when yours is getting older. Oh boy. But yeah, like, you know, so it's like I think there's, because there is, and it sounds, God, it sounds like such a cliche and sort of like protect my feelings, you know, sort of response to say like, oh, you know, there's so much terrible in the world. Why would I want to see it in horror? But there are horror movies that I watch that you get that feeling. But I think for me, like, I just like that idea of like watching something where like, you're like, oh yeah, I can't wait to watch that with somebody.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to ruin somebody's day.
Like a party movie, pretty much. Like, yeah, let's go and pop this one in. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, and I love nonsense too. Like, I love nonsense movies. And I think that's why I love, like, a lot of giallo. Like, we can say how artful they are and how deep thematically they can be, but like a lot of them are nonsense.
Just like, why are you terrorizing this person? That's the fun of it. What are you doing?
Yeah. And, you know, so it's like, as much as like a lot of them have something to say, or, you know, they're exploring like these like sort of deep like folklore type things. Like, you know, other ones have orangutans killing people. It's fine, you know.
Giallo is such a, Giallo is just a genre. Like
if they told me it was Italian for the word random, I would believe them.
Isn't it a color? Isn't it like mean yellow? Right.
It is.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. Because most of the posters were yellow.
Yeah, and it was also like they I think they came from like the concept of like
pulp. Oh, sure.
And back then, I think like pulp books in Italy were also yellow, colored yellow as well. Yeah. I think it's something like that.
That makes a lot of sense. And I know like at the time, they didn't really consider their films horror. It was just like murder mysteries kind of thing. Like, so.
Yeah, which I love murder mysteries. I thank you, Scooby-Doo, for that. So that's like another thing that I will always love. And I think that's what...
I very much attest that Scooby-Doo is what gave me a fascination to true crime. Like, it's just, I always want to know who did it. Tell me who did it right now.
And how why would they want to do this? Why would they even do this?
What's wrong with them?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I actually like the fact that you said vampires and werewolves, because even though people have their fair shares of universal monsters that they really enjoy, they don't really say those. To be completely honest, like on my show, at least I can't speak for everybody else, but on my show, that never is like a go-to. I think I've gotten vampire and that's it. No one's ever said mummy, but you know, we need a good mummy movie back. Like it's been way too long. Tom Cruise didn't do it for me. So it's been way too long. I'm definitely looking forward to another mummy movie, which I know Disney is actually making a new one. They're making a new Under Wraps movie. So yeah.
Oh, really?
I'm so stoked about that. So yeah, I feel like we need a new mummy movie. Hopefully soon, but, it's interesting that you say that, do you like more unorthodox, like, vampire flicks and werewolf flicks? Or do you just, like, on the nose, like, wow, that person's turned into a vampire right now, or that person's totally going to be a werewolf or something like that? Like, I'm just curious.
Oh, that's such a good question. There's a part of me that will always prefer traditional, because it's what I grew up with, but... especially in the realm of vampires, we've gotten so many unusual, so many cool out of the box.
I mean, Kronos being one, like, gosh.
Yeah, like even like Bliss or the Transfiguration is another
speaking
one.
Speaking my language.
Yeah, so like for me, like I will always, you know, I always appreciate the classic, you know, guy with a cape.
Sorry about that, everybody. The woes of recording on the internet. It happened yet again to us. We're still working out what app is going to work best for the show when it comes to these types of things. But sorry, thank you for bearing with us. I mean, you know what? It's funny that I even say that. I say thank you for bearing with us. Now I'm rambling, but you don't even notice. It's fine. Heather, you're talking about vampires.
I was talking about vampires. But yeah, so I think, you know, for me, like growing up, like I love the traditional, you know, classic vampires, you know, but I think there's something to be said for whenever you can bring something new to the table, with how you can frame your classic monsters. And, you know, so we talked about a little bit, you know, with Bliss or the Transfiguration, like that kind of stuff. There was one that was, I want to say like 2010 or 11, it was called like Midnight Sun was another one.
Yeah. I remember that one.
And, there's also, you know, in terms of just classic movie monsters, like there was this movie called The Revenant that came out, and it wasn't the one with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Right.
But it had David Anders in it, who was on Alias. And I think it came out like, I remember it played Screamfest, I think the same year as Human Centipede. So I want to say like 2010. And
okay,
it was such a different take on like reanimated corpses and stuff like that.
I've seen this one.
It's got some really funny stuff in it. Chris Wilde is in it as well.
Yeah.
And he was, I got to interview him.
Oh, and David Anders.
Fun. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
So.
Okay, I got to check this one out.
Because I do a lot of streaming lists and I hardly ever see it pop up. But if it's ever going to pop up somewhere, it'll probably be Tubi. Because they have like 9 million movies over there.
Yeah, they have everything.
But I always recommend it because it's, you know, it does some new stuff. It's, you know, it's funny, but also very serious and stuff like that. So it's a good one that I don't think many people really talk about.
Yeah, I haven't even heard of this one. This sounds like a blast. It literally says it's a zombie flick meets vampire flick meets cops and robbers. I love it. That sounds great. Oh, yeah. I want to check that out. Oh, man. Well, thank you for that. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm definitely going to check that one out for sure. So kind of going along the lines a little bit, I guess, more in the psyche. You've kind of touched on this slightly here on the films that you watch, but you typically kind of just like, those aren't my go-to comfort films. But what would you say are your fucked that horror films? Like those films that you're just like, yeah, I'm not touching that film with a 10-foot pole. And I know that's kind of hard to say because it's kind of your job to touch them. But,
yeah.
But like, what are those films that you try to either stray away from or try to just kind of be like, keep an open mind on or something like that?
You know, I still have never seen Cannibal Holocaust.
Really?
Yeah, and I think I'm okay with it. I know that the problem.
I mean, you're not missing much.
Yeah, and I just feel like
Cannibal Holocaust is not that. It's an important movie, but it's not that great.
Yeah, I feel like I know the importance of it enough to where I'm like, I could spend those 2 hours doing something else.
Yeah,
and I don't have to really do that. So that's one, and from all intents and purposes, everybody I've like talked to about it, they've always been like, oh, it's not that bad or whatever. Just watch the version without the animal violence, which is fine. But I'm like, that's not really my thing.
It's fair.
Yeah, there's not a ton else. Like I know, I actually avoided for as long as I could, like the I Spit on Your Grave remake.
The 2010 one?
Yeah. Because I'd seen the original. My ex and I, we always written like horror movies, like, you know, like it was like the summer before we both went to school. And I really had this like really weird string of movies where like one week we rented The Hills Have Eyes. And then the next week was The Last House on the Left. And then the week after that was I Spit on Your Grave.
And are all of these the 70s and 80s version?
Yeah. And I was just like, okay, we need to rent something happy because, like, we've just had 3 weeks of like really messed up movies, and I need
The Last House on the Left. In my opinion, that version is a little bit more brutal than the remake, in my eyes.
Oh, it totally is. I mean, it feels real, which is the worst part of it. And honestly, like, I knew like, because David Hess would often come to Flashback in Chicago. And so he'd be a guest there. He was there a few times, I think at least three. And seemed like the nicest guy in the world. Everybody, like, had a great time talking to him. Nobody could say a bad word about him. I would never go and talk to him.
Just because of that.
He's so good as Krug in that movie that it just, I couldn't get past it.
That's fair.
Yeah. And I'm a little bummed about it because, like I said, everybody said he was just a really nice guy, completely the antithesis of, you know, that character that ended up, you know, sadly sort of defining him, you know, for pretty much the rest of his career. And, you know, but I was like, oh, no, thank you. And it's tough because, like, I basically go back and rewatch it because we do the Craven Craven podcast. And I think the version that was on, because I think I watched it off of, like, Tubi or Vudu or one of those. And I think it was edited because there were certain things that I remember from the first time seeing that movie that were kind of shortened a bit.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I think this is the edited version, but I was okay with that. You know, so it's like stuff like that. Like I finally got over my, because everybody kept telling me like, oh, don't watch Martyrs. And first of all, never tell somebody not to watch something.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Cause like, that's even like the thing with like reviews, because like, you know, I'll put out my review for like Conjuring 3 and I'll be like, it was fine. You know, some good,
Conjuring. More Conjuring.
I'm like,
if you're into that, go for it.
Yeah. I'm like, some of it's good. Some of it's bad. Some of it's really bad, but you know, it's fine. And then somebody's like, well, I'm going to go see it anyway. And I was like, okay, you should.
Yeah.
Like,
you totally should.
Yeah. I'm only offering my opinions on things and why things didn't work for me on a personal level. It's never to discourage anybody from seeing anything unless they think it's harmful.
Right.
You know, unless I feel like it's like something that like
it's gonna could be trigger potentially everybody.
It's like potentially harmful to viewers or something like that, you know.
Yeah, totally.
So, but yeah, so I had to rewatch it for Craven Craven. I was like, "Oh, okay." I was like, "This is why I don't watch this is my least watched Craven movie. I get it cuz it's so effective."
Yeah, it really is. Like because the other one does go overboard with the more torturing acts at the end in the remake, but and this one is just and what is it? I think it's 76, right? Is that right? Or no, 78?
I think so.
Okay.
It might be 74, actually.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's 74. And it's just...
Oh, actually, it's 72. I just Googled real quick.
72, okay.
We were way off.
You were closer. But with that version, it just felt so dreadful. Like you just, they seemed normal.
Yeah.
Yet crazy. And in the remake, it was just like, no, they just seem fucking nuts. Like these people don't seem normal at all. They don't seem trustworthy at all. They knocked on the door. And when they opened the door, you just knew, like, I can't trust these people. But in the 70s version, you're just like, they look trustworthy.
They look like the type of people you would go buy some weed from, you know?
Right, exactly. like they look like someone who was just, like, kind of hiking and got lost, and they went to the last house on the left. And it's just, it's interesting. It's interesting. I'm so intrigued by all of that, but... Why would you say that is kind of one of those movies you're just like, oh, don't want need to watch that too often? Is it because of the brutality, or is it because of the rape scenes, things like that?
You know, it's tough because there's so many people who, you know, unfortunately have experienced trauma out there. And I think all of us, we process our trauma differently. And there are some people who rape revenge films work for them. As a catharsis. And I think there's a real benefit to that for some people. Myself, it's a really fine line because there are certain movies where I watch and I'm just like, okay, all right. You know, something like MFA, like, okay, it's purposeful.
Yeah.
Because it ties into the message of the movie. Effective. Yeah, and it's really well done, and it's handled with a lot of nuance. And then there's just other movies where it feels like it's there to shock, and it's not there to really say anything. You know, so it's tough because, like, I don't know that I would ever tell – again, it's like one of those things, like, everybody knows what their barometer is for this stuff. You know, so some people know, like, you know, they're looking for the hard stuff. So, you know, me telling them, you know, not to watch something like, I think it's like Murder Set Pieces, mm-hmm. which is the Sage, I think it's Sage Stallone, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's in that. You know, so I've seen it. I will never watch it again. And that's cool. I sort of ended up accidentally seeing it. So it was just like, oh, there's this new movie and everyone's talking about it. And then I was like, oh, okay. Now I see it. Mm-hmm. You know, so but somebody else is going to find value in it for some reason. I'm not here to judge. You know, so it's tough because it's like, especially when I'm doing review writing, like I always want to, I try to think about who a movie is being made for. And I try to, you know, I try to bear that in mind when I'm writing about stuff, because like there's a lot of horror fans out there that sort of look down on teen horror. I love it personally myself. Because I always just think, you know, everybody needs their foot in the door. Like I don't necessarily have anything for or against the Twilight movies, but I'm glad they exist because mm-hmm. I got a whole generation of kids into vampires. But at the time that they were coming out, you have all these guys in their 30s making fun of the movies, making fun of the fans and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, that's like, just because they're coming into this genre from a different direction doesn't make them any less valid. You know, right. It's something, you know, just be happy they got here.
Yeah.
You know, who cares how they got here?
Open arms, open arms.
So, and I'm sure there's people who grew up in like the 50s and the 60s who like, see people of my generation who grew up on like 80s and 90s horror and they're thinking, oh, that trash?
Right.
Like, you know, it's all generational. So for me, I never, you know, again, I think also because Twilight came out like right when I was like going through my divorce, I mentioned it was like the book was like a big thing and I started reading it. I was like, what is this garbage? I was dead inside. I was like, what is this? Oh, I was like, whatever. So I never even finished the book. And so that's why I will never judge it because I didn't finish.
Yeah, you didn't finish it.
You know, two, obviously it was really popular for a reason. Yeah. You know, and three, everybody, you know, everybody deserves some sort of entertainment that they feel like they can connect with. Because like, what else is the point of making art if you're not trying to connect with people?
Exactly. Yeah, you know? It's actually funny you even brought up Twilight. Because for a long time, I thought Twilight was a movie about vampires playing baseball.
Because it's always what everybody talks about online.
It's always what they talk about. And when I finally saw the first one, I was like, man, they're not even playing baseball for that long.
Like, when are they going to start playing baseball again?
Like, I was like, oh, that was so fun. That was just so much fun. And now, like, I just get my, I guess, my Twilight fix from, like, TikTok or whatever. Because I've never seen, after the first one, I just didn't watch any of them after I was very disappointed that there wasn't vampire baseball throughout. But yeah. So, I feel like that's a very anime thing for me to say.
But you know, it's true because like, you know, I'll go and watch something like Wish Upon and I'll see like all these people sort of judging it like they're reviewing The Godfather or something. And I was like, it's a horror movie for
fucking
teens.
I hate that. Yeah, like I really, really hate that. And like I feel bad because of those reviews like that. The kids that are, and I don't even want to call them kids, the teens that are becoming horror fans now, they don't have those horror icons that we had. Like they don't get to have Jason and Freddy and Chucky. I mean, they can obviously because they're there, but it's just like that. It was from a different era. And they now don't get to have that. And that sucks because of reviews like this, where what their only main icon is what, Jigsaw?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Jigsaw, because you can't choose Insidious because the monster always changes. You can't choose The Conjuring because the monster always changes. So it's just like that sucks because of these reviews of people not allowing something to be a franchise. And I get it. I like new IPs too. And I like new ideas and things like that. But franchises aren't always bad. You know, they're not. This is how we get icons. Like it or not, Michael Myers is an icon because it's a franchise. Like it's just that's how it goes. It's interesting. But, and granted, sure, the 80s definitely, they just had an influx of just like a wealth of knowing how to stretch a dollar.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's so hard nowadays, but they were, well, that's not necessarily true because we did get things like Scare Package and the Pale Door and stuff like that on minimum budgets. But it's just in the 80s, they really knew how to stretch a damn dollar.
They really did. Much probably to the chagrin of some crew members, though. But
that's true.
But they did.
Yeah, that's true. That's very, very true. Well, cool. Heather, one last question before I bid adieu. The last question is a question that I ask every single one of my guests, and that is the question of why horror? It's the question that we are literally trying to answer every single time we have an episode released. But why horror? Like, what is it about the genre that just keeps having you coming and coming and coming?
Wow, no pressure.
No pressure.
So, it's funny. I've probably asked myself this too. Like, you know, why do we
I feel like we all have.
Like, right? why do we watch these things? Like, what is the goal?
Yeah. Like, that guy's guts just got ripped off. Why am I not fazed? Like,
yeah. But like, if I'm in real life and somebody like cuts their fingertip, I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, it's just like, oh shit, don't get away.
Yeah. Like, I'm gonna throw up. Yeah. You know, I think part of it is us testing our own limits in a way. Because if you're not trying to move forward in some fashion of your life, like, then you're not really living, right? Like, you're just sort of in stasis. And like, that's boring. And so, you know, if you're not constantly consuming something new or different, you know, whether it's movies, music, whatever, like, I think that's part of the human experience, is like that sort of constant evolution. Yeah. Of things that we've experienced, things that we enjoy, things that we, you know, get out of life. And like, and I think horror for a lot of us is sort of a big part of that. You know, and I think also for a lot of people, it's just maybe for a lot of people where they feel like, you know, they've had to deal with a lot of things in their lives that, you know, have pushed them into some dark places. I think there's part of us that we're like, we like to watch these things and find the connection to the heroes because, like, we want to be the hero. And maybe in some way we feel like we are, like that we've been able to come through something and we are there on the other side. Or maybe it's somebody who wants to get through something hard and they watch these things and they see, like, somebody survive against, you know, Ghostface or Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger. And they're like, well, gosh, you know, if they can do it, I can do this and I can get through this. And, you know, I think there's a part of all of us that just feels like, you know, I think we all get our fair share of lumps in life and having to sort of figure out how to navigate, you know, taking these hits and how do you get back up and how do you keep moving forward? And I think for a lot of us, we figure these things out through watching horror.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because like, I always joke like, oh, you know, if I was in a, you know, a real life horror movie, like I wouldn't know what to do, but you know what I would, because like, if I'm in the strangers and the strangers come into my house, you know, because they weren't about, you know, if it's somebody without guns, like I'm going to go hide myself in the bathroom. You grab the back of your toilet tank because that's the hardest item in the room. And you wait and you go swinging the minute they get through your door.
Yep.
You know, it's like you there's like all these little things that you watch that sort of become part of like almost like your defense as a human being. And I think we all have it to a degree, whether it's like how we are in real life, how we are, you know, online, how we are, you know, professionally, personally, whatever it is, like we all have this moment where we have to protect ourselves in some fashion.
Yeah. I literally think about that all the time when I'm in the shower. Like, what would I do if someone were to come out or come after me right now in the shower? And it's just,
grab your shampoo, squirt at their face really fast.
That's a good one. Yeah. Yep. I always say, take the shower head, spritz them in the face with the shower head for a little bit. And then you grab, like, you take that moment when you're doing that to grab, like, the shampoo and, like, add it.
There you go.
Now things are slippery and wet, and you're just like, oh, shit. So, yeah, now we got a clumsy killer.
Somebody's got to do a podcast of, like, basically, like, self-defense classes through horror movies.
Yes.
Because that's a whole thing right there.
I would listen to that every day.
Yeah. But I mean, it's true though, because like I remember being a kid and like watching somebody like Nancy like set booby traps in her house.
Yeah.
You know, and it just made you realize like you have two choices in life. You can, you can be the victim and let it overtake you, or you can be the victim, accept it, and then find a way to move past it. But you're never dismissing what you've gone through, because that's just who you are. But right. I think there's a good part of you, and this is something that I've had to think about with things that I've dealt with in my life. Like, do I want that to be the definition of who I am? And do I want, when somebody thinks of me, that's the first thing that they think of. It's like, oh, well, you had these horrible things happen. Like, no, I want to be known as somebody who went out there and like fought for something that she really wanted to do. And that she went out there and she put herself out there in ways that like are so unbelievably stupid now that I think about it. Like to go and like watch houses go into foreclosure and I ruined my credit history for 7 years. Like, and just take all these really dumb risks that I know I wouldn't take right now. Like, but I'm glad I did, because like, there's just something about having to evolve and move forward. And I think that that's kind of what horror is. And that's why I'm always about like getting these new stories and things that push you forward. Like, I honest to God, I will probably never stop talking about like something like Possessor. Because to me, that is like one of the best examples of 2020 horror that was really pushing the genre forward. And, you know, so that's why I'm like, you know, there's going to come a day where I'm going to get to sit back and watch stuff as a fan again, and purely as a fan. And that excites me, because you know what? I know we're going to still have good stuff coming.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, it's weird, but like, I think we all have a little bit of a different reason as to what connects us to this genre. But I think ultimately, you know, in the end, I think it's just like the human condition. Like, I think we just want to know that regardless of how bad it ever gets, like, we're going to come through this one way or another.
Yeah. That's awesome. I honestly, like, I love asking this question, because everyone's answer is always so different. No one has ever had the same answer. And you said it beautifully. You know, this is a genre that is constantly evolving and constantly testing its own limits. And we're still in the fortunate position with this genre where we can take risk and make something off the wall, like, and just use Murder Set Pieces again, like something like Murder Set Pieces. Like, you know, there's no other genre that's going to allow that except for ours. And it's interesting.
You're not going to ever get the Human Centipede, the musical, you know.
You're not. No. And if you do, it's from a horror fan. Like,
exactly.
You know,
Tom Six is listening to this right now and he's taking notes and he's like, yes, that is what we needed. We needed musical numbers during the Human Centipede.
I mean, it would have been perfect in the third sequence for sure.
Yeah.
The jailhouse scene would have been great for all of that. but it's interesting because, like, you know, horror fans. And I was talking to a buddy of mine, Johnny Birchtold. And when I was talking to Johnny, like, we were talking about this thing. And, when we were talking about it, he was just like, you know, it's good when horror fans make horror, because horror fans understand the genre. Like, you know, you're not coming at a position where you don't understand the genre, which, you know, you see it from a perspective of like, and I use Get Out for a perfect example, and Us and things like that, because Jordan Peele, with both of those films, you can 100% tell, oh shit, he's a major horror fan. Like, he actually really likes horror. And you then kind of move on to a few other people and things like that who've kind of come from different backgrounds and made their way into horror or whatever. And I find that awesome, because you're getting a new take. You're getting something that you don't expect. And even how you brought up Possessor and from Brandon Cronenberg, like, we kind of could expect like what's probably is going to happen from Brandon Cronenberg and being the son of David Cronenberg. Like, we can kind of assume like, oh, this movie's going to be fucked up kind of thing. But at the same time, you know that, excuse me, you know that this movie is also going to be something that's going to be artful and meaningful as well, and have some type of message. And you kind of hear like new directors getting out on the scene and fucking hit the ground running, like Ari Aster. And like, you're just, gosh, I'm blanking on his friend's name. Oh my God. I don't know why I'm blanking out so hard on his name, right? Robert Eggers. Like, you see these new guys who are coming in and just like fucking sweeping the floor with The Witch or Hereditary. And these are folks that genuinely care about their craft. And not to say that other directors and writers don't, but they genuinely understand what they want people to kind of see, how their mind works.
Yeah.
And that is fucking cool. And people should be excited about that kind of stuff. You don't have to like it, sure, but they are opening the doors to kind of say, like, this is what's in my head. Show me what's in yours. Like, and that's fucking cool. Yeah. That's really, really cool. And I'm a huge fan of, I actually interviewed him on the show a bit ago, Anthony Scott Burns. And
I was going to mention Come True, because that was what I was kind of thinking about when you were talking about that.
Yeah, Come True is one of my favorite movies of all time. And, you know, I see his work and I see, like, how much he cared. And that's why, like, I love that movie so much, because you could tell so much love and time and effort went into Come True. And Anthony and his tiny, tiny crew of like six people worked on this movie. And that's insane to me. Like, I just, gosh, when he told me that, I was like, wow, that blows my mind that's how many people were behind the scenes. Like, that blows my mind.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy.
That's nuts. Like, you made a full-length feature with like six people. That's insane. But, you know, I think of Come True, but then I think of Mike Flanagan. Like, I think Mike Flanagan is one of the most progressive directors out right now. And I still feel like people aren't really grasping that for some reason to me. And I know a lot of fans are out there who love Mike Flanagan and his work, but it's just like, I see what he does and I see that, like, he literally each film or each show that he does, he learns something new from his previous mistake. Like, perfect example, Haunting of Hill House versus Haunting of Bly Manor. Haunting of Hill House was only Mike Flanagan as the director of every single episode. That wore him out. It just completely, like, and you could feel that. You could feel that tension in how some of those episodes kind of ran, especially episode six, with the kind of that one-shot camera. But then he made with Bly Manor, he's like, fuck that, I'm directing one episode and I'm getting my friends to direct the others. So, like, I love that. I love that, you know, he takes that opportunity to kind of sit himself down and just be like, okay, what did I learn? What did I make a mistake on? And what do I want to grow from that? And I think that's cool. I think that's really, really cool. And horror is just such a emphasis on feelings and emotion. And, you know, I still can't genuinely answer my own question of why horror. Like, I don't know. It's just a genre that gets us. Like, it's a genre that was made for us. Like, you know, I'm sure you could probably, you know, think the same way of, like, feeling a bit outcasted by your love of horror and love of genre. And it's just an interesting place to be, especially now that we kind of have our people and our circle. But it's such a beautiful genre that understands us as humans.
Yeah. And
it's nice. It's nice to feel that. And I'm excited to see what everybody else makes. I'm really excited to see, you know, what comes next. And I'm excited for things like Scream to come back in the play and stuff like that, from Matt Open and from Matt Bettinelli Open and also Tyler Gillett and Chad. But I'm just intrigued to see how all of this is just gonna, you know, continue. I really just want to see it continue, and I want to see it kind of just constantly grow and just see where it can go. Because horror's not going anywhere. That's fucking cool.
Yeah, and I think the box office has been the prime example of that. And it's interesting because you mentioned also, like, you know, who are the horror icons of today? Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting because, like, I think about it, like, I think one that sort of carried over that's still viable now is Chucky. But two, I think it's going to be really interesting to see in a few months happens with Candyman.
Yeah.
Because that, I mean, that potentially could be our new introduction to Candyman and a whole new generation, like, just ends up falling in love. And, like,
you are giving me chills right now.
I mean, I'm excited because, like, I grew up, you know, in the suburb of Chicago. And So, like, you know, Cabrini Green in general always was like this, like, dark cloud that sort of hung over the West Side.
Yeah.
And because, like, years and years ago, like, when I was out there working, we always did this thing at my work where, like, we took donations and we would sponsor different kids and their families through, like, the Letters to Santa's program, Letters to Santa, through the postal service. And, like, some years we would just drop stuff off at school. And there's, like, a few years where I would actually go to people's houses and bring them stuff. Cause we'd also collect food and stuff like that. So they'd have meals and stuff, you know, for the holidays and try to bring a little normalcy, you know, for some families who maybe just don't get that at the holidays. Cause I've had, I went through a few holidays where, like, we didn't have anything. So, like, you know, and it's a bummer. Like, that's, like, the one time for kids that should be happy, you know, regardless. And like, I remember one of the years I had to go deliver in Cabrini Green and, you know, I am a white lady, very square looking white lady. Like, they just let me loose from a library going to Cabrini Green with, like, boxes, like a car full of stuff. And, like, everybody kind of just staring at me, but it was, like, it was heartbreaking because this woman was living in this house and, like, her pipes had been so bad for so long that all of the, like, and again, these are, like, these old houses that had been there for a long time. And, like, the wood was rotted and soft. And so she would be like, step here, step here, step here. And, like, and she's raising three kids in this and stuff like that. And it was just like that day. And, like, just, I stayed and talked to her for a while. Cause a lot of times people just want to talk, you know, they don't get a chance.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was probably there for about, like, half an hour, 45 minutes. And I had to do a few other deliveries, you know, but it was just, like, just her trying to make the best of it. And I'm like, I think people forget the humanity that supposedly divides us. Like, everybody's just out there, you know, especially as parents, like, trying to do the best that they can for their kids, you know, just trying to live, trying to get through this horrible world. And that to me was really eye-opening. And I also worked with, like, a lot of different West Side organizations because I used to work with, like, a PR firm who did, like, nonprofit stuff. And just having so many things change in my own head about, like, how we make things better in this world, it was a really eye-opening experience. So for me, like, I remember seeing Candyman in high school and then seeing Candyman after, like, all of these experiences, it was like a 180 for me. Wow. Where, like, it changed so much of how I saw that movie. Cause for me as a kid, it was just scary for a lot of reasons. Cause I was a stupid white kid who grew up in the suburbs. I grew up in a shitty suburb living in a trailer park, but, like, still it was the suburbs.
Sure.
And, you know, so it had a different, like, sort of, it hit me much differently after having those experiences and realizing the humanity of what is really there. Like, because I think people just, like, just stigmatize an area and they don't really consider the actual human factor in those situations. Yeah. But I just think that there's something really fascinating about the Candyman movies. And I'm really, really hoping because my big concern is after all of this, like, do people care about the movies anymore?
Right.
You know, because we've been waiting so long.
Yeah, I've been trying to do my best to advocate as much as I possibly could. And of most of these movies, like, I posted something recently about Antlers again, just to, like, let people know, like, yo, keep this shit still on your radar. Like, you know, this is, I haven't seen it, but, like, you know, keep it on your radar. Like, these are movies that people worked really hard for and they got fucked over in a pandemic when they couldn't show us. So, like, keep these movies on your radar. Cause I mean, I know, like, things like The Green Knight is, like, really exciting people right now. And but The Green Knight showed their teaser trailer at a really good time. So it's just, it's stuff like that where, you know, I just don't want these movies to get the shit into the stick. And the really popular titles such as like A Quiet Place Part Two and stuff like that, and The Conjuring and all that stuff, get a bigger light shined on them than these smaller ones that are. And that's not even necessarily saying like Antlers isn't really technically a small movie, like Guillermo del Toro's behind it, but at the same time, it's just I don't hear anyone talking about it. And yeah, every time I mention it, be like I have people in my replies saying that like, oh shit, I forgot about this one. Like, yeah, I don't want you to. Like, that's the thing. I don't want you to forget about this. I don't want you to forget about David Bruckner's The Night House. I don't want you to forget about Antlers. I don't want you to forget about even The Green Knight. Like, I don't want you to forget about that stuff. I want this stuff to be on their radar. And even Halloween Kills, like, no one's talking about that. And like, we're only like less than 4 months away from Halloween Kills. So it's just,
I know. Which like, blows my mind because shit. I feel like I'm waiting for it for so long. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, it's almost here.
Right. Oh. It's right around the corner. And it's funny because my wife is a really big fan of the Beverly Hill Housewives.
Gotcha. So
she likes,
so she's probably excited about Kyle.
She didn't know Kyle was in the movie at first until I told her. I was like, yeah, Kyle's totally in this movie. And it's pretty interesting. I'm very curious to see her in that film. So it's going to be fun. But Heather, awesome. Thank you so much for joining me. Honestly, this has been an absolute blast talking with you. Where can people find you on the internet, and where can people read your work?
Oh, nobody's going to want to find me after all this rambling. So I'm basically just mostly on Twitter. So you can find me over there at The Horror Chick. And of course, I'm over at Daily Dead, doing all sorts of stuff there, movie reviews and news and interviews. Well, actually, no, I don't really do news. That's actually Derek, who does a great job at that. So it's mostly just interviews and reviews. And then sometimes I pop up over at Fangoria here and there. Which is pretty cool and something I 8-year-old me would never believe I could actually say.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. And then I've got a new book series coming out this summer, which is also something I still can't believe is actually finally happening after so many little speed bumps along the way. But you can find out more about that. It's called Monsters. Wow. I'm like, what's the name of my book? I don't even know. No, it's Monsters, Makeup, and Effects. And it can be found over at aminkpublishing.com. And you can pre-order it now. And I also have a Twitter account for that, which is MMEFXBook.
Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, thank you so much. This has been an absolute blast.
Are you kidding? Thank you so much for having me. I'm completely honored.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Honestly, this was a lot of fun. And like I said, a bit of a dream come true for me personally. And so thank you so much for joining me. And you are welcome back anytime. You know, if you want to come back anytime, just let me know. If you're in the Bay Area, yes, well, we will be more than happy to get you on the show.
We'll go haunt the Winchester together.
Let's do it. I'm down. Let's do it.
Excellent.
But this was Nightlight, a horror movie podcast. I was your host, Prince, also known as Head Knight. Our efforts to get the show out is not enough. We need your help to spread us out some more ghoulish nights. Rating us with 5 stars is very helpful, but we would love for you to recommend this show to who would actually enjoy it. You can further support the show over on patreon.com/goodnightlife, and that's night with a K. By pledging on Patreon, you have access to the show ad-free and as early as Monday. If you don't have any bucks, it's awesome. No big deal. Don't worry about it. A new episode is released every Friday on most podcasts services around the world. And remember, everybody, don't forget your nightlight.